The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha F335 acoustic guitar, just $99. Or get a Luna Soprano ukulele, only $49. Plus the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing. Lessons for the beginner on your list. And gift cards, the perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. Today, the new Money in the Bank champion for 2017, Baron Corbin, on the show today. Who gets the best guests in the time list of fashions, right? Come on, man. Baron is carrying that briefcase with him everywhere. You hear all about his plans for cashing it in. We'll also talk about the ladder match victory that got him the briefcase in the first place. Baron's talking about making the transition from NFL offensive lineman for the Arizona Cardinals to joining the WWE main roster. You hear how and why that happened. He's also talking about what kind of help and advice he got from The Undertaker, his relationship with Vince McMahon. He's got a great story about how he found out he was being called up to the WWE main roster and taking part in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal from Triple H. Plus, he lives just down the lake from me, and you'll hear whose house he lives in. Lots of coming up with Baron Corbin, but first, we got to talk about a certain WWE Hall of Famer, who's had just as much success outside the ring as he did in it, helping people, making people fit, make America fit again. I'm talking about Diamond Dallas Page and DDP Yoga. He's taking his program to the next level, though. He's doing workshops all over the country to give you the chance to do DDP Yoga with DDP himself. Just go to DDPYogaWorkshops.com to find out when he'll be in a city near you. In the meantime and in between time, you can download the DDP Yoga Now app from the App Store or Google Play and do live workouts from the DDP Yoga Performance Center in Smyrna, Georgia. That's exactly where we did the video for Judas. That's just one of the cool special features of the app. The app's also got nutrition tips, recipes, cooking tips to get you on a healthier eating plan and tools to track your progress. DDP's thought of everything with this app, and the app also lets you do DDP yoga wherever you want, whenever you want. That's what I love about it. I open the app up. I do DDP yoga on the bus, in my hotel room, backstage in the dressing room, basically whenever I want to or need to. Getting ready to go to Japan and Singapore to do a couple matches with the WWE. Got to limber up with my DDP yoga when I get there. I got a 24-hour flight to Singapore. Yeah, and then two matches with Hideo Itami. You kidding me? I'm going to have to be doing my DDP yoga to keep in shape, and right now, DDP is giving you 20% off his killer program. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to take advantage of the great deal. And DDP Yoga really is more than just a workout program. It's truly a healthier way to live. And like I said, the app lets you do those workouts anytime, anywhere, right from your smartphone or tablet. So take advantage of the 20% off. That's 20% off the app and all DDP Yoga related merch at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho for 20% off the DDP Yoga Now app, all related merch at ddpyoga.com/Jericho, including hats, t-shirts, yoga mats, heart monitors, so much more. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Change your life today. Get the best physical shape that you've ever been in. Get the best mental shape you've ever been in. Do it all right now at ddpyoga.com/Jericho.
Talk is hockey. Talk is Jericho.
Okay, so we're here in my office with Baron Corbin. And the funny thing is that you have now inherited kind of the wrestler's house in this area.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a few houses down from you, and it's got some lineage to it.
Yeah, because it used to be Big Show's house.
Yep, Big Show and Undertaker.
Bought it from Undertaker. We were laughing back in the day that Big Show's like, oh yeah, he bought Undertaker's house just to kind of like, you know, get on his good side. And then he moved here and then left. I've only seen him in the house once about 10 years ago.
Yeah, I know he wasn't there very long, but you know, now I'm in there, and it was built for a big man. I mean, the house is—it's the roof's like 18 feet, 20 feet in the living room, and the doorways are 12 feet. So it's kind of perfect. I mean, Big Show is a very big human being, so it fits him quite well. But
it was made with for Undertaker as well.
Yeah,
and you're no slouch in that department either. I mean, you're right up there. So It's actually, you're saying like the doorways are bigger and everything?
Oh, yeah. Everything in there is way taller than it should be. My wife can't even reach some of the cabinets because, I mean, they're elevated quite a
really?
Bit. Really? Yeah, it's crazy.
I wonder if one of these days if you'd be like in, you know, in a closet or something, you'll find an old box that has like Undertaker's hat in it or something.
That would be amazing.
Like a haunt. I
mean, it's holding the special powers of the house.
Yeah. My favorite memory of, like I said, Show only lived there briefly before he moved. But he was getting pulled on a jet ski one day, and he had this big giant jet ski, obviously, because he's a big guy. But he decided he wanted to go tubing, and the damn tube was going in the water. It looked like the Loch Ness Monster was being towed because it had this giant wake of water. Like, he got his face cut under the water. It was just this big plume.
I figured if he crashed, there wouldn't be much water left in the lake.
That's right. Exactly. But this is a good time for you. Got a great house. And of course, here you are, the Money in the Bank winner 2017, which is a huge deal.
Yeah. I mean, it's an amazing accomplishment just for my career. But, you know, when I was getting ready for it, I heard, did you come up with the Money in the Bank? And
yeah, if you ever heard of a guy called Brian Gewirtz, he used to be a writer in WWE, now he works for The Rock. He and I came up with the concept for Money in the Bank. Whereas, just a quick story, it was for WrestleMania, and there's a bunch of guys that had nothing to do with all pretty big names, Kane, Edge, Christian, Benoit, like Shelton Benjamin, who was getting a push at the time, and they didn't know what to do with us. So they were trying to come up with a bunch of ideas, and then they said, well, maybe like a multi-ladder match. And Brian said, well, there's really nothing to go for. And I said, well, what if we went for a piece of paper, like a contract, where you would get a title match the next night? So then he went and talked to Vince about it and came back and said, well, Vince loves it, but it's going to be a title match for a year that you can cash it in. And Vince's only demand was that it had to be in a briefcase.
That's awesome. I mean, did you have to carry it back then like you do now? Like, I have to take it to the airport with me. I have to take it everywhere I go. And it's, you know, bright blue briefcase. I'm walking through the airport, you know, usually dressed in all black. And then I've got this bright blue briefcase with me. But is that how you guys had to do it?
I never won it. That's the thing.
Yeah, Edge won it that year, right?
Edge won it that year. And I think if he didn't have to, pretty soon afterwards, if you won that briefcase, you had to carry it.
Yeah.
Because then guys would be putting their cell phones in there, their comic books, or, you know, whatever it was. But so you have to carry that with you everywhere.
Yeah, now it's my second carry-on. It's replacing one of my carry-ons. So I actually have to use it to carry like my iPad or, you know, my headphones or whatever I have in my little bag that I take on the planes. Now is going to be in the briefcase.
Has that been told to you? Like, you have to, what did they say?
They just said it goes everywhere with you. And, you know, I'd be afraid to put it in my check bag. I'd be afraid it'd come up missing. So
right,
it doesn't fit in any of the carry-ons I carry on. So now it is the carry-on for
me. I guess
it's
just like having a championship, like a title you have to carry with you in your bag. Or like, you know, like the crazy light up jacket. I don't want to check that. So has anybody said anything when you put it through customs?
I got a pretty good laugh because I've only had it a week now. But I got a pretty good laugh just when I pulled it out of the overhead bin from some people behind me. And they were laughing and they were like, Money in the Bank. And because it's a huge sticker on the briefcase.
It says that on the side.
In huge letters. And so, I mean, there's no way to avoid any attention. I mean, you are the light up jacket going through the airport carrying that thing, because everybody either goes, oh, well, what's that for? Or they know, or they just, if they don't know who you are, they think you're the biggest fan in the world walking through the airport. So
that's what they probably think too. Even if they do know, it's like, this guy's a mark for himself.
Yeah,
we get it.
Hey man, he loves the briefcase, he's living it.
So how was the match for you, and how'd you find out all the you know, that you're gonna get it and all that sort of stuff?
You know, it was really cool. It was a fun process. There's a lot of guys with a lot of skill in that match, and I'd never been a part of a ladder match before.
First time.
Really never even climbed a ladder in a wrestling ring before, and that alone is scary enough. I mean, you start going up, it starts wobbling, there's people moving, and you know, you're 10 feet in the air, and then when you're, you know, up there to take the briefcase off, now you're 12, 14 feet, and you have no hands on the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just went 40 minutes in a grueling war of, you know, trying to be the best, and you're up there, your legs are shaking, you have no hands on it. It's terrifying. I mean, the flat out is terrifying to be reaching for that thing. And then you're thinking, okay, don't be that guy that takes 5 minutes to get it off the hook. Like, you know, don't fall off. Like, this is a big moment. Don't screw it up. So like all those things are going through your head, and it's a sigh of relief when it finally comes off the hook.
It is funny that you mentioned that, because that's something I think a lot of people don't understand. It's like, okay, so a wrestling ring, it has some give to it. It's not a trampoline that some people, like when you get in, it's very hard, but there is give. So when you put the ladder in there, it is wobbly.
Yeah, very.
It's not like you're putting it on solid ground.
Yeah, and a few people have probably landed on it, or I've used it to hit a few people with. Like, it's not in perfect condition either. Right. So you're worrying, like, as you're going up, man, I hope nothing breaks. I hope the leg doesn't fall out, you know, whatever it is.
And like you said, when you get that leap of faith, when you're just near the top and it's just your legs on there, and I always use my shins to kind of grip the side of the ladder, like I use that for leverage, because that's it, because you don't have your hands.
Yeah.
Like, even go in your house and try and change a light bulb where you're barely reaching the light bulb with no hands on the ladder, it's scary, man.
No, and then the chain is, you know, 60, 70 feet from the ceiling, so it's moving as well. Mm-hmm. And if you watch, I watched it back because I was like, man, it felt like forever for me to take that off. But I grabbed the chain, and for some reason, I start leaning backwards. And then, like, I feel the whole chain all the way to the ceiling. I'm like, that face of, oh no, I'm going down bad. But then I, like, swing back.
So it's kind of
crazy because it's a heavy-duty chain, so it moves, and it will move you when you're just standing on a wobbly ladder.
It's not something that you train for.
No,
you
know? Not at all.
You learn how to take a bump or hit the ropes, but when they just say you're in a ladder match, it's not like there's a tutorial to go through to make sure that you have your balance at all times.
I went back and I, like, watched some old tapes. Like, was it 2001, the first one?
I think it was L.A., which I believe was 2005.
2005, yeah. 21.
21, that's it.
And, you know, so you go back and kind of start and just watch what people do, and it's all these amazing athletes like Shelton Benjamin and guys like Edge and Christian who are used to flying off these things. I mean, you were doing lion salts with a ladder. Like, it's I'm 6'8", 275 pounds. Like, it's, I'm not meant to fly up ladders and jump off ladders. So for me, it was I just wanted to stay grounded as much as possible and use it as a weapon.
Rather than you should, because Kane was in that match,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
that'd be more along the lines of what you'd be doing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
And, I mean, that was the goal. But then even just kind of when I was there trying to feel it out and walking up the ladder, like, I was like, okay, well, when the people are in here, I'm in the moment, it won't be scary. It doesn't change. Maybe it's worse.
It's amazing, though, when you put those together, because you get the seven guys, and it's a long process because there's a lot to do. But once it gets put together, it flies by.
It does.
So fast.
When we were kind of figuring it out, it was like, okay, you know, this should be good, 30 minutes in your head. And then, you know, you're laying out there and you're starting to realize, oh, we're 35 minutes deep. We're 37 minutes deep. Like, it does. It flies by. And it's just crazy how quick the time goes when you think that, oh, this is going to go, you know, fast. Or do we have enough to make it all the way to the end? And then the time's gone, and you're like, oh, man, you know, it's crazy just how quickly it goes when you're out there.
But it's a great feeling, too. Like, I know the last one we had last summer, and Kevin was in it, and Sammy was in it, and just explain to the guys, like, yes, you want to have, you know, the kind of the holy shit big bumps, but the most important part of any ladder match is that climb, that slow climb.
It is.
The wrestling climb. Because that's the drama. And that's all that people, they'll chant holy shit, but then they'll just go back to who's going to get to the top of the ladder.
Yeah, you know? They only care about moves for a few seconds.
Right.
Like, you know, I'm a big believer in that moves are not what people engage with. Like, they say, oh, it's cool. Like you said, it's holy shit. It's that moment. But then 5 seconds later, they're like, well, what's next? So it's about that story. It's about the drama. It's about teasing that climb, really just invoking the emotion of people. I think, you know, one of the coolest parts for me, aside from pulling down the briefcase, was, you know, everybody's excited to see Nakamura in his entrance. And when I beat him up in the middle of his strobe lights and send him in the back injured, the emotion that people let out of hatred towards me was amazing. Like, that's those moments you never get back. And it wasn't about doing a triple indie onto something. It was about, you know, making some people truly angry because I took away something they really wanted to see. I mean, that's what it's about. And like you said, that slow climb, they want to see those guys go up and get it. They wanted to see Nakamura. They wanted to see AJ, you know, walk away from that briefcase. So when they take all that time getting to the top of the ladder and I pushed it over and went up and took the briefcase, I mean, it's awesome. Like,
it's a great feeling.
It's
right?
What you do it for.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the Master of Puppets element where you know you got them in the palm of your hand, you know?
Yeah, you can feel it. You feel that rumble. Even things where you're just out, you know, laying on the ground, if you take, you know, a big crash and burn, and you're out there just laying it, but you hear the people rumbling for you to get up. You can't help but feel that energy. I mean, it's surreal. There's nothing in the world. I mean, you know it maybe from being on stage and stuff, but there's nothing in the world like that.
Gratification of the live audience.
Yes.
You know, let's talk about Nakamura quickly. I mean, that was a great spot in the match. First of all, the match was tremendous. Great job. It was definitely the best match in the show and really well done all across the board. And I love the way Nakamura was booked in that, to where, you know, you kick the shit out of him. He's gone. And he comes back for the, you know, Spirit of 76. But that was really well done because people really like him. He's special.
Yeah, he's got just a special aura about him. There's something, you know, that he does that just people gravitate towards too. I mean, it's that Freddie Mercury attitude of, I mean, I don't even know what it is. You can't really describe what he does, but he's something special, and then he's dangerous. I mean, you know, working with him, you can get kicked in the head real quick. He definitely left me with a good shiner
a couple
weeks ago. You know, so he's that rock and roll vibe that, you know, a lot of guys carry, and something you've made very special, but then, you know, he's elevating it in his way and making it different in his way, but then he can kick your head in. So it's really cool for people to see. And when he came back, I think people had forgotten about him in the match. Mm-hmm. I think that the match was compelling enough that they were like, you know, so engaged in what was going on. And when his music hit, that place came unglued.
Back he comes, right?
Yeah, I mean, it came unglued.
So let's talk about actually winning the briefcase and if you thought about when and how you might want to cash it in. I also want to hear about how you went from the NFL playing for the Arizona Cardinals to getting signed to the NXT without having an actual match. But before we do that, let me say thanks to Saks. Saks Underwear, not only for keeping me comfortable on stage last Saturday at Pain in the Grass in Seattle. What a great festival that was. Great time at the White River Amphitheater with a great rock and roll crowd. Not only at Pain in the Grass last week, but also for keeping me comfortable as I get ready to embark on this long plane ride to Singapore. 24 hours to Singapore, getting ready for my upcoming WWE matches later this week. The Saks Kinetic underwear are the best for that. I wear them on stage, wear them when I'm working out, wear them on a long plane ride. I got the Quest 2.0 for travel days like today. And when I'm just hanging out doing interviews and stuff like right now, I got the Quest 2.0, right? So they're really lightweight, quick drying, perfect for hot summer days and super for long plane rides, okay? So the Kinetic Modern Fit Boxer is what you need when you're going to be active, like jumping around on stage with Fozzy or going to the gym or going for a run or a bike ride like I did today. Whatever it is you like to do, the Kinetic line offers great support and does that moisture wicking so you're always cool as a cucumber and dry as a bone. So shout out to Saks. That's Saks with two X's, S-A-X-X. Both Saks underwear lines also feature the unique Saks ballpark pouch. It's a hammock shake pouch that keeps everything in place, keeps the Franks above the beans. Both lines prevent chafing, and all us dudes know what a great feature that is. The only problem you'll have when you switch to Saks underwear is keeping up with your laundry, so you'll always have a clean pair. I'm telling you, once you switch to Saks, you'll never go back to tidy whities or regular boxes again. And I think once you give them a try, you'll switch as well. You won't be able to live without the great comfort and support you can only get from Saks. Go to SaksUnderwear.com/Jericho to get 20% off your Faust Paddle Juice for a limited time only. That's Saks underwear, spelled S-A-X-S. xunderwear.com/Jericho. Get 20% off Saks with two X's. Go now. Use my promo code Jericho. Save 20%. Keep your Franks and beans in order. Wear the most comfortable underwears you're ever going to have in your life. Do it with Saks and go do it now.
This holiday, switch to Cricket Wireless and get a free LG Fortune with no annual contract. Cricket Wireless, something to smile about.
Requires number ported and service activation. Minimum $30 per month. First month service charge and in-store activation fee up to $25 due at sale. Tax and restrictions apply. One-time fees may apply. See store for details.
This is Talk is Jericho.
Let's talk about winning the briefcase, though, because, I mean, it's the tradition where now you have a whole year to cash it in. And I think only maybe once or twice in the history of Money in the Bank, somebody that had won it did not become the champion.
No pressure there, right? I mean, I think Sandow's the only one that
felt bad for him. Sooner or later, it has to happen. But he's like, yep, I'm the only one.
Well, I think it's because he decorated it with all the fluffy stuff. he decorated the briefcase his way. Maybe that didn't help. But
right.
Yeah, no pressure there to not fail when you cash it in. So, I think it's cool because you can do a lot with that. I know Tuesday night, I played a little bit of head games with Jinder. You know, he was in a match with Harper, and they were going to battle, and, you know, I walked out and just teased it for a second, and the instant reaction from the audience just when that briefcase comes out, they're excited. What's going to happen? And then, you know, you don't do anything, and then they're bummed. Like, it's fun. It's a fun thing to kind of throw in people's face and then take away or tease, and, you know, I get to tease people for up to a year doing that. And then, you know, find my moment, whether it's SummerSlam or Mania. And, you know, there's something I want to find out about. The contract states, you know, a WWE championship. Does that include the Raw? Does that include just SmackDown? So I think there's a lot of things that can be done with it.
Yeah, and some guys have cashed it in that night. Others have waited, you know, 364 days, so you just never really know. But it's a great vote of confidence from the company.
It is. I mean, you're in the on-deck circle, if you will. Like, right. You know, this guy could be our next guy. So it definitely is when you have someone like Vince put something like this in your hand. It's hey, we believe in you. We believe in what you're doing, and we think you can be a star, and it's up to me to make it happen. Mm-hmm. But this is definitely a launching pad for that.
But I found that since you came on, like, I didn't see much of your stuff in NXT, but since you came onto the main roster, you've gotten a slow push, but always in the upward direction. It seems like right from the start, they kind of had their eyes on you, grooming you to get to the next step.
Yeah. And that's what you hear is like, you know, don't be in a rush. Don't be in a hurry. You know, just, it's a marathon, not a race. And so that's kind of what I feel like they've done with me, is just to continually allow me to grow, continually allow me to kind of branch out. And it's a very slow process. And I think that's the best thing for me. I think it's the best thing for longevity.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're at the top day one, where do you go from there? Mm-hmm. It's that kind of thing. You want to be here. You know, I want to be here for 10 years. I want to have 10 WrestleManias right under my belt and stuff like that. And I think the road I'm on now will lead to that.
Especially with when you're talking about, you know, the amount of experience that you have. I'm not sure how long have you been working for?
You know, I was in NXT for like 3.5 years.
Okay.
And prior to NXT, I'd been in the wrestling ring maybe one day, and that was just when I found out I got a tryout. I go, man, I need to figure out what these feel like, what the ropes feel like. And it's so funny because I went to a school in Arizona that Johnny Stamboli was running.
Johnny the Bull.
Yeah, Johnny the Bull. And I was like, hey, man, I've never been in a ring before. I'm going to WWE for a tryout. And he's like, well, let's just hit the ropes, let you move around. I hit the ropes. And I was like, what are those things made of? Like, you know, it was a very rude awakening. That's coming from the NFL. You're like, man, this is a lot more physical than I expected. Mm-hmm. So that was a cool thing. And then, you know, that process of NXT, it was short, 3.5 years. So
that's what I mean. Yeah. So
compared to these guys who've been doing it for 10, 12, 14 years, it's a drop in the bucket.
It's funny. I wrote about it in my first book. The first time I hit the ropes, I said, I felt like someone hit me in the breadbasket with a baseball bat. And that's another thing people don't understand. Those ropes are hard as shit when you first hit
it. It left two gigantic bruises straight across my back. It was unbelievable.
You have to build up a callus to it.
Yeah, you do. And even if you go like, and I'm sure you experienced this, going away for tour for a couple months or taking some time, when you come back, you have to do it all over again.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... I remember in NXT, you would get a Christmas break for like 12 days.
Yeah.
You'd come back after 12 days, hit the ropes, go, is this what they felt like when I left? Like, it's crazy. Yeah,
I've had a rope shape.
Yeah.
But let's talk, you mentioned that you got a tryout and you'd never been in the ring before. How did that happen?
So I'd finished playing with Arizona. I got hurt playing against Denver, and I was just kind of my time to
Arizona
be
Cardinals,
yeah.
Right?
And I was actually on Rock and Roll Tour, Shiprocked. Have you done Shiprocked before?
Yeah, I haven't done it, but it's the cruise.
It's awesome. Yeah, it's a cruise. And I was on that Shiprocked Tour with a girl I was dating at the time. And
let's say it was first. So Mary used to date Maria Brink in this moment.
Yeah. And so I spent a lot of time in that rock and roll world. But one of the managers she was talking with asked me what I wanted to do next. And I said, no, I would love to go to WWE. Like, you know, I've watched it
as a kid.
I was. And I don't put that out there very often because it's fun for people to say, oh, he's just a football player. Like, I like to rub it in their face. But, you know, I grew up with my dad being a huge wrestling fan. He loved Kamala, which is crazy because Kansas City is a huge territory. But you'd get all
the
guys.
You grew up in Kansas City?
Yeah, Kansas City. So you had Harley Race territory come through there. And, you know, you got Flair before he was Flair
famous
coming through there.
I mean,
my dad's got flyers from 82, 83, 84 where, you know, guys like Flair were on the undercard. Like they were not there yet, but you had Kamala headline. Like it was cool. So I grew up with it in the house.
Was that Mid-South or what was that called? Do you recall? I can't remember what the name of the company was because it was like Bulldog Bob Brown from Canada was always working down there.
Yeah,
and these guys.
We had DiBiase come through.
It was a big territory.
The name of it, but it was always at Memorial Hall in Kansas City. And they ran it all the time. But then you got WCW and WWF coming through. And I always liked I loved playing football and big guys. When you had like Bam Bam Bigelow, Big Boss Man, big guys that could move, Vader back then. Like those were all.
All of them are great workers.
Huge, huge guys doing things they shouldn't be able to do. And so that's kind of what pulled me into wrestling, you know, being a football player. It was so cool. Like I had, you know, like Undertaker's gloves I wore to practice one day when I was a kid. Like it's
you wore his gloves?
Yeah, like the purple gloves back then when it scared me. And it was just kind of a cool thing for me to play football and watch wrestling with my dad because they kind of went together. They're both just big dudes you know, knocking people physical over. Sport, yeah, it's physical. So, you know, I was talking with that manager. He's like, well, I know the guy who handles the music for WWE. I'll put in a call. And when we docked on Monday, he called Monday afternoon, and WWE called me Tuesday afternoon and said, hey, we want to bring you out to FCW for a tryout for a week, see if you like it, because we've had football players come in before and literally hit the ropes and go, not for me. So I came out for a week, and it was a really cool experience, and I thought it was a cool training facility, you know, that they had there. It was three rings. I mean, it wasn't much, but it was
just the original. It was in Tampa,
the original,
right?
One here on Del Mabry. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't much, but it was going to be a cool transformation for me to switch over and change my body. I mean, I was 335 pounds playing football.
You're kidding me?
No, I mean, I lost 60 pounds walking in the door. So
wow.
Having to do that when your body's been so big for so long, it's a process to change everything. And then you take a helmet off, and you have to learn to convey emotion to an audience where in football, hey, don't show you're tired, don't show you're hurt, don't show you're, you know,
and it's a team too. You don't have a personality 100%. In football.
Yeah. I mean, it's one group trying to get something done. And now, you know, coming to WWE, there's countless guys with crazy personalities and you know, it's definitely a different world. But it was a cool transition to go through, and then going to NXT when Hunter built us that amazing performance.
Yeah, I mean, it's let's talk about the training. When you first started training, what are the similarities or differences between NFL training and WWE training?
I mean, it's crazy how much goes together. I mean, footwork, especially for me, I was an offensive lineman, and now WWE is like, your footwork has to be good or you get hurt. You know, you blow out a knee, break your ankle, all those things can happen.
Balance wise?
Yeah. Out? Like just the way you move, you know, always being balanced, having your feet underneath you, not stepping over your own toes, you know, and it just is something you have to be an athlete in general. And
interesting,
yeah. Now when you're in there, like we said, the ring moves a little bit. You really got to have your balance, the ropes and running. And, you know, I do a lot of sliding in, sliding out. And I pride myself on being very agile. Mm-hmm. So that's just something that's really important to me. But then the physicality portion, you know, you have to train your body. Like we said, build calluses. And, you know, we're taking a lot of crashes and burns and eating the posts and, you know, landing on the floor. It's not a soft surface, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know that very well. And so you have to train your body to handle all the physicality of it. And then what changed for me was the way I worked out and my diet. Those were the two biggest changes. I went from trying to be as physically strong as possible, and it didn't matter what I looked like, to now being strong and looking good. So you have to change. You know, I can't just try to bench 550 pounds. You have to really kind of learn how to lift to make yourself as aesthetically pleasing as possible. Mm-hmm. And so all of that changed, and it took a lot of research, and the diet was the hardest part. You know, I was going from eating large pizzas 4 days a week and milkshakes and whatever I wanted because I had to be as big as possible. And now, you know, life is plain chicken and vegetables, and it's not fun.
It's pretty boring, isn't it?
If it tastes good, you can't eat it. Especially, you know, my wife is Spanish, so they do a lot of amazing food, and I have to just sit there and smell it.
Yeah.
You know?
I just, I've been doing some dieting over the last few months, but the last couple months, you know, rock and roll, you get back on the rock and roll game, and you still eat right, but it's not wrestling eating right. I got in the scale today, and like, well, I'm back on the diet, so I had my four little eggs and my four strawberries, and then that's it, looking at the pancakes, looking at the peanut butter toast.
Everybody else is enjoying it.
And I'm just sitting there, it's the worst ever. What about mentally? Like, when you come from football into wrestling, was there a mental change you had to go through?
To me, it was an ego check a little bit, walking in the door, going from the being at the top of something to back at the bottom. So it was pretty crazy. You know, you have, when you walked in FCW, you had like, I can't remember, street team. We had to go paper towns.
Oh.
Like, because we were trying to get fans to our shows. You know, we had 18 people at Orlando Armory. It's not what it is now. Like, right. We started literally from the bottom. So going from the NFL where I was catered to, I had a massage therapist that was free, a chiropractor's free, hot, cold tubs, like
they're all the food you want.
Yeah, you don't do anything. Like, you're literally catered to, because you are the product in a sense. And now when you come back, it's starting over. You're trying to make it. So walking through the streets of some little town stapling flyers to a post was an ego check for me.
That's,
you know,
interesting.
Yeah, I was going from like, I'm king of the world to, oh no, I'm at the very bottom and no one cares about me. You know, it's
stapling,
like
stapling. Yeah,
yeah. And you have guys, you know, we had guys like Roman Reigns there when I got there, and Bray Wyatt, and, you know, they're looking at a big guy coming in, and you're not exactly liked when you walk in, you know, day one. And lucky,
you got to earn
lucky,
your...
Yeah, you do. You got to earn the respect. And lucky for me, my ego was big enough that I didn't care if anybody liked me. But
there is a time when you're kind of like, ooh, because, geez, no one really likes me. That's not cool.
Yeah.
Because you want to have friends, you know?
Yeah. You want the respect more than you want a guy to go, okay, this guy really wants to be here. He wants to be a part of what we're doing because... You know, everybody goes through a lot of stuff that people don't see with WWE, from the traveling, the hotels, the planes, the long hours you're there just waiting for meetings to be over and stuff like that. The hours you put in, a lot of people don't see that. So when you have the guys around you, you want their respect and kind of that camaraderie of a group, if you will. But, you know, you're there to make money. So at the end of the day,
when did you finally start getting the respect, or when did you start realizing that you wanted that?
Well, I mean, day one, you want it, but you want to act tough in the sense a little bit. So, you know, you're kind of like, well, I don't care if you like it. But then you go out there and you start working with those guys. You know, I had one of my first matches with a guy, Xavier Woods. Mm. And you're going, okay, man, he's good. He's at the top of this game. Like, okay, I want him to respect me. So once that bell rings, that's where I feel like you really earn it. Like, you know, how do you perform with these guys? You know, are you doing your best to make them look good and those kind of things? I think that's where it's earned. And then they step back and they go, oh, man, he's actually pretty good in there. He moves well, you know, whatever it is. And I think that's where you slowly start to get it. And then when you start putting the matches together and they're like, wow, that was a great match you had with him. Then, I mean, it just kind of it builds itself, if you will. Like some guys come in and want to be best friends with everybody. And
that doesn't work either.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. So it's a weird line you have to kind of find and you have to kind of toe both sides of it.
Yeah, exactly. But let's talk about your first days at NXT and the Performance Center. Some of the advice and tips you've gotten along the way from the veteran of the locker room like The Undertaker. But first, let's talk about fast and easy, a delicious way to satisfy everybody's hunger before the matches, after the matches. Talk about Little Caesar's Extra Most Bestest Pizza. It's the most cheese, the most pepperoni at the nation's best price. Only $6. Come on. This is Little Caesar's and they got your back. So, of course, that's where they're giving you a delicioso satisfying pizza for just $6 plus tax. The Extra Most Bestest Pizza is hot and ready for you all day, every day. And Little Caesar's claim of the most cheese and most pepperonis at the nation's best price is based on comparisons of the following pizzas for the top four national pizza chains. They put their Extra Most Bestest Pizza up against the other three chains: large, round, standard menu, one topping pepperoni pizza, sold at everyday menu price. That's boring. But you can judge for yourself. Go pick up an exciting Little Caesar's Extra Most Bestest Pizza at participating locations for just $6 plus tax. Enjoy the cheesiest, most pepperoni pizza your $6 can buy. Go to Little Caesar's now. The Extra Most Bestest Pizza for $6 plus tax is available at participating Little Caesar's locations now. Go satisfy your hunger. Have the Extra Most Bestest Pizza you can ever have and do it at Little Caesar's. All right, if you're looking to buy a new or used car, then you need to download the TrueCar app like I did. And I'm speaking from experience because, you know, when I say the TrueCar really makes the car buying experience quick and easy, you know that that's the truth because I did that with my 2016 Cadillac Escalade. Saved money, saved time, and it was so easy, man. You can do the same for you whether you're looking for a brand new car or a used vehicle. With TrueCar, you get upfront pricing information so you can enjoy a better car buying experience. And when I say upfront pricing, I'm talking about real pricing on actual inventory in stock at the local TrueCar certified dealer of your schwazen. Using TrueCar and the TrueCar app lets you see what other people paid for the car you want so you can determine a fair price. Feel confident when you buy your car. TrueCar connects you with a local certified dealer of your schwazen who will honor your guaranteed savings, which makes your car buying process quicker and easier. And TrueCar also shows all of the dealers available incentives before you arrive at the dealership. Oh, complete transparency. TrueCar users save on average, check this out, over $3,000 off MSRP, and over 3 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. Over 13,000 dealers in TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, so there's definitely one near you. So when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Make things easier for you mentally. I'm telling you, go check out TrueCar and do the TrueCar app. Go check it out. Do it now. Remember, some features not available in all states.
Hey everybody, this is Spike Ferguson from Spike's Car Radio. We're out here in the porch of at the Malibu Kitchen at the Malibu Country Mart every weekend doing podcasts. My first guest is Jerry Seinfeld. He's right here. We're going to have Jeremy Piven. We're going to have Chris Hardwick. See you soon on Spike's Car Radio.
I think he's over-projecting for a podcast.
And I love to over-project for podcasts. Join me every week at PodcastOne.com and Apple Podcasts.
You're listening to Talk is Jericho.
Who was your major trainer when you first started?
Billy Gunn. Billy and Norman Smiley. They really kind of grabbed onto me day one when I walked in. I think Billy came on board at FCW about a month after I'd gotten there. And he just kind of clicked with me. And same with Norman. Norman really taught me the fundamentals and all those things. And he's such a great guy. Yeah. I think he's the
Everyone
master. I mean, there's not a person you can find in this world to say a bad word about him.
That's true.
But then, the whole process of going through NXT from Hunter being hands-on with you at NXT, I mean, I had Taker was, give me input on entrances and just the way I move. And, you know, he's even yelled at me a few times, like, why would you do that? Don't ever do that again. You never do that again when the Undertaker yells at you. And
is
tells
he just
you
watching you? Because you never worked with Undertaker, did you?
No. At the Royal Rumble, I got my hands on him a little bit,
yeah.
But then he eliminated me. That was uncool of him. But
so was he just watching you?
Yeah, he would come in, I think, you know, around Mania and start getting, you know, where he needed to be in the ring and moving around.
See.
So he'd watch us.
So he's at the PC.
He'd be at the PC. Okay. And he would kind of just grab onto me a little bit, which was cool. But
because you're a big guy.
Yeah.
You never know, right?
Yeah,
he might
want
to work with you some point.
I mean,
right?
You can only hope that a guy like that would be like, hey, you know, I want to go with that kid.
But if nothing else, he sees another big guy. And there's a certain way of working that, like a small guy, I can't tell you how to work like a big guy because I don't know.
Yeah.
But he would know. So what type of advice is he giving you?
Well, just that advice of, you know, make everybody earn everything. Make everybody treat you like you're a monster in a sense. Like, don't give them anything. So I think that's the biggest advice he's given me is, you know, really protect yourself. Because if there's a guy, you know, like Rey Mysterio out there, and he knocks you down the very first try.
Yes.
Like, how big are you really?
Mm-hmm.
So it's that process. And Rey was one of the best at getting big guys down. So, you know, he starts at the ankle and works his way up.
Right.
Like, you really got to make people earn it. And that's something he instilled in me. I mean, if you watch him, he's always got his hands up. He's always on his guard. And nobody ever just gets anything from him.
You got to stay on Undertaker.
Yeah, you do.
You have to stay on.
You do.
He will sell.
Just run you over.
He'll sell great, but you got to stay on him, man.
Yeah.
That's the rule.
Yeah.
And if you work with him, everyone knows that.
Yeah, and that's, you know, something he, like I said, really showed me. And then you have Baldo there, who's another big man, and he really showed me some good stuff. And then Terry Taylor's kind of the finishing coach. He really teaches guys how to be a star just from how you carry yourself when you're walking through somewhere. It's a big thing that I carry with myself. You know, even if nobody knows who I am and I walk in a room, I want them all to go, man, that guy does something.
Right.
So, you know, how do you present yourself as a star? So, you know, Terry Taylor is amazing. He's as old school as they come on philosophy, you know. He'll yell at you all day. I remember when a suplex was a finish, like, and you're like, well, Terry, it has evolved a little bit.
That's right,
you know?
Right.
But he has some real golden points, you know, in his head that he can hand you, and he can really teach you how to be a star, how to take a moment and enjoy like a moment. And I think Sean's up there now. Like, they have all the tools for success, and it worked for me. I mean, so if you don't make it, I truly believe it's on you that you didn't take advantage of it. And
we said that before. You know, like, if you go through the PC and you don't make it, you've been given every opportunity.
Yeah,
it just wasn't for you.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
And it's not for everybody,
right?
Just because I tell people, like, oh, well, you know, he's a nice guy, but my mailman's a nice guy. It doesn't mean he's a WWE superstar. You know, it's just, it's not for everybody, but they give you every opportunity. So
who was your first match against?
I think it was Xavier. Like, well, the first match was Memo Montenegro. He's Del Rio's younger brother, and he was there at FCW this, and it was like a tryout show for guys that come in and take the class with Norman before, like, they're not signed to WWE contracts.
Yeah.
It's like guys who are trying to get into FCW. And it was on that show, and it was terrifying. My legs felt like 12,000 pounds. It's the first time I'd ever been in, like, little trunks in front of an audience.
And played football in front of tens of thousands of people.
Yeah, I mean, it's a switch, though. Now I'm out there, you feel naked. I mean, now I wear pants, so it's better for me because my legs are so tattooed. But, you know, you're out there in little trunks, and I remember there was one point in the match, he looked at me, he goes, what are you doing? And I was like, I have no idea. Like, I've been training for 6 weeks, man. Like, I have no clue what I'm doing. It was really funny. But then I got to work Xavier and Tyler Breeze. They were a tag team. And that was the first time I got chopped a couple times, too. And I was like, man, those are horrible. Like, there's nothing fun about being slapped. But I mean, I was like, looked at my chest. It was like welted and bleeding. And I was like, Well, hello. I guess I'm welcome to that part of it, you know. So, I mean, it was fun and exciting. And when you're out there and you're getting hit, and you go, yeah, that stings a little bit, but it's awesome. Then you get back there, like, oh, my chest is on fire. Like, I'm sure they were just messing with me a little bit, but mm-hmm. I mean, I've done it to other people too.
You're the big ass guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where did you get the name Baron Corbin?
You know, I submitted a bunch of names, and I have no idea. One of them had Baron something, and another one had something Corbin, and they put them together, and I was like, hey, cool. Mm-hmm. Like, it still fits that kind of dark vibe. When I came in, I was trying to do, like, this just super dark character with essentially Rob Zombie and in this moment kind of combined. I had, like, shredded clothes, and I would cover them in baby powder, so when I'd move, it looked like they smoked. Like, it was pretty wild. And
that's cool.
And it just fit the whole personality. So, I mean, it was a process, and it was something they came up with. And
was it clothes that Chris from In This Moment made?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He made Chris, yeah, Chris and Travis both made them.
So that's the thing that people that might know is that the cool stuff that In This Moment wears is actually made by Chris and Travis, Travis the guitar player, which is cool. So they made your stuff for
They made my jackets, and they were helping me with my pants. And, you know, it kind of just helped me form that personality that grew into what it is today, and kind of taking my own view on it.
Yeah, we toured with In This Moment in 2012. And I remember Maria telling me, "Yeah, my boyfriend's into wrestling." And I was
I met you like right after that at the Royal Rumble in St. Louis.
Oh,
and that was right before my tryout. That's when they brought me out.
Okay, yeah.
And then I think once at the Revolver Awards.
Awards too, because you're a big metal guy.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because even last year, we were just in Download this year, but you were there last year. Didn't you do something with, you might have been Download, but you did something with Corey Taylor.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us about that, because like, I had Corey was telling me about it from his side.
Yeah, it was funny because Corey and I started, you know, throwing jabs. It was Aftershock.
Aftershock in Sacramento. Yeah.
And Corey and I were throwing jabs back, who was going to steal the show, NXT or Slipknot. And so I was like, well, why don't you come over to the ring? Let's see how tough you really are. And before, you know, when we went out there, I was still poking jabs at him in the back. I was like, oh, you're not man enough to do anything. I'll get your wife out here. She'll do it for you. And then during the match, I did. I poked him a few times.
Because he was in the front row.
Yeah. I mean, we all know Corey's got a temper on him.
And he also loves wrestling.
Yeah. He's a huge fan. Yeah. And so I think the excitement and his temper and me poking and making fun of him in front of everybody, he cracked me right in the teeth pretty good. So
he slapped you or he punched you?
It was like a half-half. Like, I like to tease him. He's got little baby hands.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's a little guy.
So I don't know if it was a fist or a slap or what. I know it stung pretty good, but it was pretty awesome, and it was cool. And then they tore the house down that night. I mean, mm-hmm. you've seen Slipknot countless
Absolutely,
times, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
You know, I just talked to Corey the other night. I want to start getting some new ideas to potentially help or change my entrance music just to evolve it. And, you know, I was asking Corey for some pointers, and he was throwing me some good stuff. So I've stayed tight in that rock and roll world. And then, you know, I got the Most Metal Athlete of the Year award last year, which was really cool to be there and be a part of. And
would you actually go there?
I got to go. They sent me to New York, and I got to accept the award on stage, and Anthrax played like right after I got the award. Like, I mean, it's pretty cool. The coolest part was like, you're going back there and stand next to him, and Jonathan, one of the guys from Anthrax, was like,
"Oh, he's a huge fan.
Hey, man, I'm a huge fan." I was like, "Dude, you're Anthrax." Like, you know, it's a surreal moment when you see those crossovers of people who are a fan of what you do and you're a fan of what they do. It's cool. And rock and roll, I think, has a big mix.
They're very similar.
Yeah.
You know, that there is a lot of guys in the business that love wrestling and vice versa. But and there's a mutual respect there.
It is. I mean, they know the life of the road. They know, you know, how far away you're from your family, your home, and all those things. And it's cool. And I got a lot of good friends like Shinedown. They all love to watch the shows. They came
Weren't
out.
Weren't you hanging out with Zach somewhere?
Yeah, Zach. Yeah. We were in Birmingham, UK. They were out there with Iron Maiden. Yeah. I think they were on tour.
Yeah.
And they had a day off, so they came to the show. A couple of them did. And Zach's been to a few shows. One time I went to their show, and all of a sudden Zach just left stage. And in the middle of a song, I was like, where's he going? And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he jumps over the rail and hits me with a championship belt. I don't know where he got it or how he got it and why he left the stage in the middle of the song. But, you know, I mean, it was
That's
pretty
right.
funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you're talking about having the mutual respect with you know, rock bands, et cetera, et cetera. And that's because now you also have a bigger spotlight from being in the WWE. You mentioned that you were in NXT for 3.5 years. Was there a point where you were like, man, can I just get to the main roster already?
Yeah, it was funny, you know, going back to the beginning a little bit. Like, when I got here, I was like, this will be easy. I'll be out of here in a year. I'll be on the main roster.
Now, why did you think it'd be easy?
I just – because I my ego, back to my ego, you know, I mean, I was always one of the best football players. I won the Golden Gloves in boxing. Like,
so you're a boxer.
I was a tough kid, and I was always very good at everything. It's just kind of, except for tennis. I can't play tennis to save my life. That's the only thing I can't do. But, you know, I've always been a natural at a lot of things. And walking in the door, I was like, I'm going to be out of here in a year. And I got a year in, I was like, man, I don't know anything. Like, I literally know nothing. It was crazy to go a year and go, man, I have so much to learn. Because every time, I mean, still to this day, when I go out there, you know, my first Money in the Bank match, first time with ladders, I mean, you can't train for that. Mm-hmm. You have to learn on the fly. And
there's a whole different psychology behind it. Yeah.
And that was the biggest thing, too, is like learning the psychology of what to do, when to do it, timing. Timing is huge. You know, you can miss your moment.
It's everything.
And it will change the outcome of whatever it is you're trying to do. I think Cena's one of the best of timing. The guy knows the moments for things and knows how to create those moments. And, you know, so getting to work with him a few times was awesome. But, yeah, 3.5 years in, I was very antsy. I still knew I had to learn a lot. But I think it's like, I don't know what the old saying is, a fish is only as big as his bowl or whatever it is. But, you know, being there, I feel like I'd soaked up as much as I could in NXT. I felt like I was truly ready to move to the next level because I was going to grow and learn so much more. Getting to be in there, you know, with guys like yourself and Cena and Randy and those guys that are the best, like, that's where you learn now. That's the evolution of your career and growing. So 3.5 years, I was beaten on the door to get out. I was ready to go. I was frustrated. And, you know, Baldo and I were butting heads a few times just because I was like, let me go. Like, I want to be an adult and be free and and do my thing, you know.
And what would he say that made you guys butt heads?
We just did. It was just one of those things. Yeah. I think, you know,
you're not ready yet.
I mean, I had a little bit of an attitude. Mm-hmm. I've always had an attitude, and sometimes I would just not be the leader I should be or whatever it is. And Baldo would have to check me a few times, check my ego.
That's a good coach will do
that. It's great. It's great. He's a great head coach because he keeps people in line there. And it was good for me. Like, there were a couple times where he'd have to check my ego, and it was good because it made me step back and go, okay, I got to chill out, or that was too far, or whatever it is. Like, there's certain instances I remember him yelling at me for wearing the wrong pants, getting on the bus. And it's such a little thing, but, you know, you get that attitude of I'm above the system in a sense.
Wow,
and
great point.
It was actually in Sacramento, I think. I wore Under Armour pants when I was supposed to be wearing Tap Out pants. And, like, I'm thinking, nah, no big deal. I can do what I want.
Because Tap Out's the sponsor.
Yeah, but it wasn't even that. It was just that was the uniform that NXT guys were supposed to wear for traveling. And I said, well, I'm above that. I'm going to wear the pants. And I got on. The bus was full of people, and I think I'm the big star. I just main evented with Finn at the show and got slapped by Corey Taylor, and Baldo's right there to go, you're not that good yet. You know, like, he checked me in front of everybody, and it's a good thing to have. It's a good thing to have a coach who can separate friendship and being coaching, because, you know, if I would see Baldo out to dinner, we could be friends and talk, but, you know, in the building, in NXT, in that atmosphere, he's the head coach, and you know, you really
WWE will do that. You will get put in your place very quickly.
Yeah, and it's good for you because it doesn't allow anybody's ego to get out of hand, because we all have our egos. We all are our own little rock star, if you will, you know, and you have to go, oh, yeah, I work for this,
that's,
you know,
right.
You know what
that's
I'm saying? Right. Like, I really can't do this without them. So it's good to get that check every once in a while.
We were in San Francisco. You'll like this story. And I was in the room. I was main event. I'm the heel at the time. It was the suit and tie Jericho, the real asshole people.
Yeah.
Somebody threw a battery, a D battery, hit me in the back of the head. And I was like, I remember Shawn Michaels says, well, you just lost your main event. So I said that. You just lost your main event. I walked out of the ring, walked to the back, and I'm like, I ain't going back out there. F this, F that. I ain't going back out there. I turn around. Undertaker standing there. He goes, are you sure you ain't going back out there? I said, yeah. He goes, are you really sure? I'm like, no. Maybe you should go back out there. Okay, I'll go back out there. Yeah. I got to do the walk of shame back to the ring. But I'll never forget that. It's like, well, that put me in my place. You know, I'm not doing it. Undertaker tells me to do it. I better go back to the ring and shut up.
I've heard good stories about him being a guy who definitely puts people in check.
Yeah,
I heard a good story of, you know, him lighting some people up about being on their cell phones At the monitor, you know, something like that. So, I mean, it's good to have those people who will do that.
Well, and the thing is, too, in the roster now, there's not a lot of guys that are there. I mean, Take comes and goes, but there's not a lot more in the tank. Triple H doesn't wrestle too much. I mean, there's really not, like, now that I'm not there, there's not a lot of guys that are at a higher level, Big Show, to tell you, put your freaking cell phone down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And you need it, but sure you need it. Like, And I would love to be that prick that does that. I'm not there at that level yet. Obviously, I've got to be there for a few years before I can yell at people. But it's just good to have that. It keeps the history of respect.
Respect.
Like, I mean, it's just all those little things. Like, even sometimes when I go in the PC and go to train and I just see something and someone doesn't come introduce themselves, and I'm like, okay, I'll remember that, dude. Like, no problem. And it's just, that's what you need. Like, the wrestling has such an amazing history of respect. And those guys kept it around. And
but sometimes too, like, you have to be the guy to tell that person, hey man, you got to introduce yourself when you come in, because there's no manual. I'm sure even for you coming in from football, maybe you didn't introduce yourself to everybody because you never did that before.
Well, I think for me, I was, you know, being a pro football player, it has its locker room etiquette. It has its things like that, you know. And I was a salty football player. Like, it was crazy. You know, you get in a fist fight on the field, walk in the locker room, and it's, hey, we're teammates. You know, have a good night, man. Cool.
You talking about with your own guys?
Yeah. Oh man, I would fight with my own teammates all the time on the practice field.
Well, why?
I just was a salty prick, man. I mean, that's how I played the game. Yeah. I mean, it was funny because when I got to training camp, my first year there, well, I'd been there like six weeks prior to the next training camp. It was my first time trying to make the team in Arizona. And there was a defensive lineman who pushed me in the back, and I turned around and I was like, you want to go, dude? Like, let's go. And he walked up and I punched him like four times. Like, the third shot knocked his helmet off, the next one knocked him out. And I was like, oh man, I'm gonna get in trouble. I just knocked out a teammate. And Russ Grimm, my line coach, was like, that a boy, like, hell yeah. It's like, it was crazy because it was just, they love that salty attitude. And
well, so they want that.
Yeah, they just want that. But you still know, like, the respect and the etiquette. So when I heard I'd gotten a tryout with WWE, when I had went to that training facility for a day and talked to Johnny the Bull, I was like, hey man, what is the etiquette I need to know? What do I need to know walking in the door? You know, give me those details so I can at least have that part of it. I'm still going to be my arrogant prick self, but I want to pay the respect that, you know, guys from the beginning have put into this. And that was the one thing he really put in there, was go in there, introduce yourself to everyone. It doesn't matter if they're the bottom or the top. Introduce yourself to everyone, shake everyone's hand. That was one thing that he gave me. So that stuck with me, you know, a guy who put in his time here as well. It's just, that's the history of it. And you got to pay respect to it.
But and also, it is okay to be a little bit of an asshole. Steve Austin taught me that. That doesn't mean you're an asshole to people or being a jerk or, you know, tripping the nerd in the cafeteria so he falls down with the soup. But it means sometimes you got to believe in yourself and stand up for yourself, even when others maybe don't.
Oh, definitely. I think that's part of success. We're not a team. At the end of the day, we're not a team. We're individual superstars trying to be successful. Mm-hmm. And you have to be selfish and you have to have a little bit of an ego. And like you said, you got to be a little bit of an asshole. It's just, that's just what it is. You have to, because if you don't do it, you'll just get run over. No one will pay you. I mean, the nicest guy in the world would not make it in this. They just won't, because you will get taken advantage of. You'll get used.
We've seen that before. There's a lot of nice guys that didn't make it as far as they could have or should have for that reason.
Yeah. So you have to know when it's your moment and your things, and you have to protect them. And if you got to be, you know, rude about it or prick about it, it is what it is.
Stand up for what you believe in.
Exactly. I mean, that's what it is. If you believe in it, and if it's a sword you're willing to die on, you have to.
That's true. Yeah, Vince taught me that. If it's pick the mountain you want to die on, and if you pick the one you want to die on, you better be ready to die on.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and he preached all the time. You know, like, grab the brass ring. Like, you're not going to make a bunch of friends when you're trying to be the best, when you're the top guy. You know, others don't want to watch you. It's funny. Who told me this? Arn told me the other day. He's like, you know, it's funny because if you live next door to a guy and you buy a brand new Honda Civic, your neighbor's going to be like, dude, good job, man. You really earned that car. But if you come home driving a Bentley, he's going to be like, who is this dude? Like, he probably stole it. He's selling drugs. Like, something like
that.
Like,
deserve that.
Everybody wants you to do good, but not really good. And so, like, that's where it is. You're going to rub people the wrong way if you want to be the best. I've rubbed plenty of people the wrong way. But what I'm doing is what I believe is right. And I think, you know, walking away with money in the briefcase – is an attribute to that. It's an attribute to protecting myself and fighting my battles and, and, you know, trying to be successful, trying to be the best.
So let's talk about someone else in NXT that probably had quite an impact on your success. I'm talking about Dusty Rhodes. I want to hear about your experiences with Dusty. Everybody who worked at NXT had some great times with him. But when you do talk about him, of course, you have to do your Talk is Jericho tradition of the Dusty impersonation. But before we talk about the Dream, I'm going to ask all the Sexy Beast Talk is Jericho listeners one question. Are you watching alone on History? If you aren't, what's wrong, man? Go do it. The show is amazing. It's a real reality show about survivals, okay? 10 survivalists were dropped into the wilderness on North Vancouver Island, forced to deal with harsh weather conditions and the threat of wild animals. This is the real deal, people. It's the fourth season, started a couple weeks ago. They did something a little different this time around as well. The 10 participants are competing in 5 teams, all right? Brothers, fathers and sons, and a married couple. And listen, if you haven't seen this show, you got to check it out because it's a very real, very true survivalist reality show. The participants were split up and dropped off as individuals. They got to bring 5 items per person to the island. And in order to win the game, the teams have to find each other, then survive on the island together and longer than the competing pairs, the other competing pairs. Talk about a test to relationship. And here's the craziest part. They are truly out there alone. No camera crews or production people with them. No crazy challenges to win special privileges. All the participants are given cameras with directions on how to film themselves as well. No camera crew out there. They got to document their own experience and survive whatever Mother Nature throws at them with next to nothing. And the pair that lasts the longest goes home with $500,000, $500,000. But winning that money is not easy, not by a long shot. All the people playing have to build their own shelter, find their own food and water, fight off wild animals, and do it all using whatever they can find in their surroundings. Okay, the mental toughness, the endurance, the ingenuity, the self-reliance. You need all of that and more to win alone. You really got to check the show out. Set your DVR, do whatever you need to do, but be sure to watch Alone. You'll be totally hooked after one episode. I'm telling you, it is riveting and it is real. Alone airs Thursdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central on History.
Talk is Jericho.
Again, about NXT, I'd like to ask people, because I never got the chance to really work with them, what was the influence of Dusty Rhodes on you?
Astronomical. I mean, the guy's personality is infectious. The stories he tells, like, that's what wrestling is, it's storytelling. And Dusty can sit there and he can tell you the most insane story about stealing railroad ties and blowing up a train and all these things, and you're going, I don't know if it's real. I don't know if it's not, but he believes it so much that I want to really picture the Dream laying on the side of a hill with dynamite on the train tracks. Like, like you really envision it as he's telling you the story. And for me, that transition has always been the hardest. Like in football, you have a helmet on, you hide your emotions. If I did an interview, I'm telling you how I feel. I don't care if you like it or not, because you want to interview me. I'm not out there saying, hey, come talk to me. You know what I'm saying? So it's like always off the cuff. But now having to grab a microphone and, you know, convey something to the audience, whether, you know, you have it kind of in your head, what you want to say, and then you're saying it. But I don't know. It's crazy because it's hard to do. It's something I never realized was as hard as it is.
Did just you promo?
To do a promo, like to get up there in front of people, and if I have to tell them a nursery rhyme to make them believe that that's real, like that's hard to do. You know, I can stand up there and tell you I'm better than you and all those things in my ego because those are true feelings. But now when I get in, I have to start to tell a story or explain something, or even if it's not my words, like it's really, really tough to do. And so Dusty was like a huge part of that, of getting me to really feel what I'm saying and be in the moment with what I'm saying. And
we have a tradition here on Talk to Jericho. You have to do a Dusty imitation.
I mean, my favorite was when Dusty, he tells about getting pulled over coming down the highway and a guy didn't know who he was. And he says, what? You don't know whose I am. Well, you go tell your grandmama that you didn't know who Dusty Rhodes was and you ain't never coming home for Thanksgiving dinner again.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, that was one of my favorite stories by him. He said he got pulled over coming from Orlando to Tampa, and the police officer didn't know who he was, and so he told him to go tell his grandmama that he didn't know who the American Dream was.
That's great.
So good.
Well, we talked about that. I remember, though, when you first came in, you did some promos and said, can you watch this? And I remember saying that it's a little bit wooden.
Yes.
You can tell that you're reciting lines.
Yes.
And that's the hard part at first, until you can really figure out, who is Baron Corbin? What's my character? How am I going to deliver this?
Yes.
Right?
I mean, it's such a process. And, you know, going to NXT, I had a little bit of freedom there towards the end. I thought my promos were getting really good and they were strong. And then coming to WWE, it's a whole nother level. You know, you have a whole nother people to teach who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, coming in the door, I didn't want to ruffle any feathers on what I was saying. So I didn't want to tailor anything so much. So it even felt wooden then. It felt like, ah, man, he's just saying what he's supposed to say.
Exactly.
And then they're like, hey, we're going to put you on Talking Smack tonight. Okay. They're like, well, I'll just do you. And then they're like, holy shit. Like,
see, that's, yeah,
that's good stuff, man. Like, where is that coming from? We got to get that here. And it's just different. Like, mm-hmm. you say, hey, go say what you want to say. I'll rip it out all day. Mm-hmm. And going out there and having to say that. But now, you know, after talking to Vince and stuff, he's like, all right, just give him bullet points and where he needs to hit his mark. And they're giving me more freedom and I'm getting more freedom. And
that's,
I think,
cool.
That's going to be the biggest thing for me and to help me. You know, if they want me to go out there and battle with you on the microphone, I know I got my hands full. But if they say, hey, go out there and just have some fun with him, like, say what you want to say, do you, I'm going to be a lot better off than if they're giving me.
And that's the thing too, though. And when you're a pro, like when you get to that point, like you said, battle off of me, I wouldn't know how to do it to where you could do that.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's just part of the confidence of learning who you are.
Yeah.
And once you get to that point, once again, you're 4.5 years in the business. It takes years. But when you get to that point, there's no situation that you can't go and just kill it. I don't care what it is. Match, promo, whatever. Gimmick, dumbest idea ever. Whatever you got, let me do it.
Yeah.
But that takes time.
It does. I mean, and it's, you know, why we're at the top level. That's why we do. They see that ability in us. They see, hey, 8 years from here, you know, what can we do with him? Mm-hmm. Can we change? Can we make him funny? Can we do whatever? And they can go, yeah, oh yeah, he can do it all. Like, I mean, that's the goal.
Sure,
the goal
is
to be able to do everything. And I know, you know, back to the saying, it's not a race, it's a marathon. It's
that's right,
for me to get better every single time I go out there. You know, I get Michael Hayes is helping me a little bit here and there with promos, and you know, he's amazing at what he does. And you know, he likes to tell me I'm horrible all the time.
But, that's part of his thing.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's a good thing because it makes you want to be better. It
yeah,
makes you
sure.
want to go, come back, and he'll go, man, that was a good promo, or that was great. And go, yeah, I told you I'm the best, and walk away. Like, I want to get it back on him. So yeah. It's good and motivating.
What type of advice or conversations have you had with Vince?
He's an intimidating person in a sense. So I think, yeah. You know, you walk in there and I want to emote confidence to him anytime I'm around him, and I think we've developed a little bit of a rapport.
Maybe that's Vince right there.
Yeah, hey
hello Vince.
You hear me talking about him.
Continue, but, though. You developed a little bit of rapport.
Yeah, so we can kind of, we're on that level where I can straight shoot him. If I walk in there and go, man, this is terrible, like, let's do this, this is better, and he'll go, oh no, that's terrible, we're doing it this way. Like, we can kind of tug of war with a little bit each other, so it's good. But he's put a vote of confidence in me, and he's, you know, pulled me into his office a couple times and been like, you know, this needs to get better, you're doing great, this, you're not as good as you think you are. Like, he's a good guy to check your ego. Mm-hmm. and you know, I had that talk a while back where, you know, he pulled in there, he's like, hey, I think you're really reaching for that brass ring, I think you can be something special, but you're not as good as you think you are. So then you step back and go look at yourself in the mirror and go, okay, like, how can I get better?
And right.
You know, is that a challenge or whatever it is? So I think that's why he is who he is. He challenges people. Mm-hmm. I think the best,
he mentally challenges you.
Yes. Yeah. He really does, and he wants to see what you're going to do in certain situations, certain pressure cookers.
Agreed.
If you will, like, he's
going to
test you and go, okay, let's see where his attitude's at. Like, let's see, can he handle this spotlight? Can he handle being the Money in the Bank champion? Like, they're all tests to get to become a WWE champion, or, you know, the top guy for WWE and be sent to Good Morning America to have a morning talk show. Like, all, everything you do, and he puts you in those situations to see if you can do that.
That's,
and
all, I think, just as important too.
Yeah. And he's also so funny. The other day he got me good. I was just standing by Gorilla and looking at myself in the mirror or something, and he body checked me, and I about went into the mirror, and I turned around ready to swing at somebody. I was like, who just shoved me? And it was Vince, and he's just belly laughing.
Yeah.
Like, but I can't go do anything. Yeah. Like, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
Vince just shoved me. Or, you know, he'll sneak up behind you and smack you across the back really hard. Like,
yeah.
it startles you and you're instantly angry and you're like, oh, if I could, if you weren't Vince McMahon, like, so I think we've got
just a big college dormitory student.
Yes.
Dick and fart jokes and smacking you in the back and all that sort of stuff. And that's when you got to do it back to him. Then he'll just, you'll be his favorite guy.
Yeah. It was so funny because then later he stopped and was texting on his phone or whatever. And I just snuck up behind him and whispered, and he's like, I could have got you back right there. And he just belly laughed. But like, yeah, you got to give it back to him a little bit.
Sure, sure. And I love that line because I got it too. You're not as good as you think you are. He said the exact same words to me. And I think as a professional, I don't care what you're in, music, wrestling, football, when your coach or your boss says that to you, it stings. You're not as good as you think you are. Like, oh my God. Like, that's the worst thing you could say to someone, but also one of the most motivational.
Yeah, it is. It's like the whole, I'm disappointed in you.
Yeah.
Like those are the things. It's not like, you went out there and you did a terrible job. That's not going to really motivate you. But when someone literally takes that shot at you and goes, you're just not as good as you think you are.
I know you can do better.
Oh, it's crushing. It is crushing. But then you walk away and you go, all right, I'm stepping it up to the next level. Mm-hmm. Like, it's good. Like you said, it you got said to you and it motivates you and it just makes you hungry. And
it becomes a test.
It's crazy.
So let's say when you finally do get called up to the WWE, tell me about that when you're in NXT. And then, of course, your first match ever is at WrestleMania.
Yeah. I mean, that was crazy. And it was really funny. It's the moment I'll never forget because we had done TakeOver in Brooklyn. And or not Brooklyn, in Dallas.
Dallas,
and,
yeah.
You know, I thought I had a decent match that night. It wasn't my favorite match.
Who were you with?
Austin Aries.
Okay.
It wasn't my favorite body of work. And I was kind of just frustrated, if you will, because it's one of those things like, man, that could have been so much better. And Hunter pulled me in the back room, and I was like, oh, no. Like, he thinks the same thing. And he never breaks typing on his cell phone to tell me this. But he's like, typing on his phone, and he just kind of looks up. He goes, hey, tomorrow you're going to be in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. And I was like, what? And he goes, and you're called up to the main roster, and just walked out. I was like, what the hell? Like, how are you going to just tell me that in the middle of a text message and then walk out in the other room? Like, it was such a crazy rush of emotion to know, like, oh, all that hard work has paid off. I'm up. Like, and I have no idea what I'm doing the next day. I have no idea what's happening in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. I don't know where I'm going to be Monday Night Raw the night after. But you don't think about it. You're like, I'm free. Like, yes. Like, finally, I'm out of the door. I don't have to scan a key card to get in the building anymore. And it's so funny because, like, and then you just walk out and he's like, hey, everybody, Corbin's going to be in the Andre the Giant and he's up tomorrow. And like everybody's like, all your peers are kind of clapping. Like, it's a very surreal moment.
So they're happy for you.
Yeah. I mean, they're definitely happy because every time someone gets called up to the main roster from NXT, it gives everybody at NXT a little bit of, I want to be next. Like, it's good motivation. Yeah, it is. People get out of here. People go up. Like, it's really cool to see every time. And then you get guys like, you know, that are just coming in, like Tino Sabatelli is there right now, and he played for the Bucks for like 6 years, but he's a football player, so we kind of connected, and when I got called up, he's like, man, like, that was so cool, I want to get that moment. Like, so it is, it really motivates people to see, and then, you know, WrestleMania, I mean, come on, dude, like, biggest crowd ever, 101,000 people, like, now I got to walk out this curtain with 20 other guys and do the Andre the Giant, and it was funny, because that ramp was, it was a mile. It felt a mile long. Yeah. I mean, you had AJ that year, right? Is that the year you were with AJ?
Yeah, yeah.
But that ramp was insane. And so I'm walking down it, and it's just a sea of people. I'd never been in that many. I mean, in front of that many people. I've played in front of 70,000 people, but now it's 100,000 people looking at just you. Like, it's a difference than being on a football field with 22 other guys. And I'm walking down there, and Curtis Axel was like, "Dude, soak in the moment." Like, he said that to me on the way down, and I was like, I'm going to either throw up or start crying, like one of the two, because it's so surreal. Like, it's insane. And then, you know, being in the ring looks so tiny. It's so funny when you're in the ring, it looks huge. But when you're looking at it, walking down a ramp like that, even this year, I mean, the ring is so small. And it's,
in that stadium.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, I mean, that was to win that thing by throwing out Kane. Like, what a culmination of hard work to get to the main roster. And then it all starts over the next morning. So,
and
you
once
know
again, what a vote of confidence, your first match, you winning. But then, like you said, we don't get our Super Bowl and then get 3 months off. We're right back at work the next day.
Monday morning, I'm showing up to Raw, you know, wondering what I got to do. And I'm starting over. It's a whole, I mean,
once again,
yeah, it's, I'm at the very bottom. Now, how do I get to the top? Cause you know, NXT's audience is very different than WWE's audience. It's all wrestling fans. But if you go to, you know, a takeover the night before a WWE event, the crowds are very different. I think that, you know, it's just I attribute NXT fans, to like punk rock or small rock and roll shows. Like you have your bands that play arenas, and then you have your bands that are playing clubs, and it's those club fans are diehard fans. Like it's like metal fans almost. Like they hate everything else that's not their type of metal. I'm a black metal fan, so metalcore is the worst. Like NXT fans are very, very much like that. Like they love NXT. That is their guys, and they're very passionate about it. And then you have the WWE audience who love WWE. It's a, you know, now you have more kids. I think NXT's not so many kids.
But it's also a million times bigger.
It is so much bigger. You know, I like to say that I like to bash people on Twitter all the time. Twitter fans are those NXT fans that are, you're not an NXT guy or you're not an indie guy, so I hate you. Mm-hmm. To where WWE is millions and millions and millions and millions of people, families, kids, people all over the world, the audience. I mean, that is 5% of wrestling fans, that Twitter world, the NXT world, that's 5%. And I mean, it's a big 5% because we're talking millions and millions and millions of people, but they're just different. Their reactions are different to different things in matches. You know, if I did something in NXT that got a reaction every time, people in WWE may hate it. Mm-hmm. Like it's just different. I mean, it's crazy. But it's great though, because it makes you find yourself all over again. It makes you go back to the bottom and go, all right, who is Baron Corbin? What do I do? What do I want people to understand? So it's a cool reset. Like nobody knows who you are. And I'm still trying to do that. I still show up in towns where they're like, we're not really sure who he is. We see him on TV, but
that's the truth though.
Yeah. You have to start over and every night you have to go out there. Like nobody knows who you are. I think.
Did you get anything from the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, like a certificate or replica trophy?
A cool picture. I mean, I got like a plaque with me standing next to it, which is pretty cool with a piece of canvas. But Cesaro was telling me that he got the old plaque when they did the new plaque. But I think because it's a new trophy, they don't pull the plaque off. So I was kind of bummed out I didn't get that. But I'm telling you, after I cash this briefcase in, I'm keeping it. Like, I'm getting it back. Like,
or at least go buy one from the merch stand. That's what I did. Got a bunch of replicas in your house.
It might not have all the dents in it.
Yeah, that's right. Let's just a couple last questions. I mean, you had great time in NXT. What's your favorite match that you ever had in NXT? Is one that stands out? Or your favorite match total? Is the one WWE or NXT?
My favorite match in NXT was definitely with Samoa Joe. That was my first big match. That was in Brooklyn with 17,000 people. That's the one Taker yelled at me for. It was just kind of my first step onto a main level of NXT. It was that first big moment for me. And so, and working with a guy like Samoa Joe, I mean, he's a big cat and he is physical he's, you know, hard headed. And so that was cool because it was a cool test. But then, you know, I really loved the match. I thought the match was great. And, you know, walking back thinking I'm the man and Taker grabs you and goes, why did you just stand there after you did that? You're like, I thought it was a good idea. No, it was not. Like, so like, it was cool to just have all those emotions.
All the emotions.
And it was the biggest crowd I'd wrestled in front of to that date. So that was something really cool. And then, you know, up here so far, I mean, obviously Money in the Bank is huge. Like that's just a huge moment for me. And Mania was another huge moment, but like just match wise, like I thought the TLC match with Kalisto was awesome. I thought we
had a hell of a match,
really cool story, and I thought that we made it different, and we didn't just hit each other with chairs for 45 minutes. Like, I really take a lot of pride in that match, and I thought it was really cool because it was just the two of us, like, in there together, and I thought it was something special, especially with such different styles. You know, like, he's tiny luchador, and I'm big and violent, like, it was a cool contrast, and I thought we made something special. But I've been a part of a lot of cool matches. Elimination Chamber was awesome, you know, and the Rumble was awesome because Taker was in that match. Lesnar was in that match. Goldberg was in that match. You were in that match punching me, telling me I was a terrible neighbor.
Like, forgot about that.
You know, yeah, you were hitting me, and you're like, I don't like you. And I was like, but I'm your neighbor.
You're a terrible neighbor.
Yeah, so, I mean, those are all cool moments that you'll never forget.
Sure.
And I look forward to, like, what's next? Like, what's the next time that – I can be laying flat on my back in the middle of the ring, and another guy's flat on his back because we've just, you know, beat the shit out of each other, and the people are just rumbling for what they're going to see next. Like, it's addicting. Mm-hmm. And so all those moments, those matches, those are all just, you know, cool things to always remember.
The TLC with Kalisto, that's the first match I saw yours. So I was like, he's getting it. This is good. Like, you've had some stuff before that I like, but that was the one where I was like, I was actually really proud of you guys. Because Kalisto, too, he didn't get a lot of spotlight for a while.
Yeah.
It was a real good moment of like, these guys really went out there. You might have even had the best match on the show, from what I remember.
That's what we've heard a few times.
And I think I was even on the show, so for me to say that. Last question, who's your favorite band of all time?
Oh, man, that's such a brutal question. And, you know, a lot of radio stations will ask me that. And I can never pick one because I love music so much that it just depends on the mood. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm in the gym, do I want Lamb of God, Hatebreed, you know, something heavy in my ears? Or do I want something like Apocalyptica or Ghost or Zeal and Ardor? I mean, like, I can just shuffle through bands. Or, you know, I got a 64 Lincoln Continental. And if I'm in that car, like, I'm listening to, like, blues, like old bluegrass folk music. Like, I can't pick one band. Cause
depending on the vibe.
Yeah, 5 minutes later, it'll be a different band. You know, I'm excited for, like, new albums. Nothing More is dropping a new album. And I think, have you seen them live before?
Yeah.
We played. They're unreal live.
Yeah.
They're so cool. And so it's just constantly just trying to find new music. I just found a band, and I don't really know the name of them yet. They're a super metal band from Chile, and they're amazing. Like, and I speak a little Spanish because my wife is Spanish, but like, I have no idea what they're saying, but it's just awesome music. So I can't pick one like iconic all-time favorite band. I mean, there's, because when you're a kid, you know, my dad's listening to like Skid Row and Meatloaf. I remember like my grandpa had like Meatloaf A-tracks. It's crazy like how good that stuff is. And then, you know, you get in like Manson and Zombie and Slipknot. Like there's just so many good bands, and I can't pick one. Or I mean, I put on classical stuff in the house sometimes when I'm cooking, and like Andre Bocelli. Like, it's music. Music is my favorite thing ever. You can't beat it.
Yeah, I understand. Hear that from you.
I mean, could you pick one? Do you have one?
I probably could pick one, but depending on the day, I'd have a top 10. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
that's where I'm at. Like, I have like a top 10 of go-tos.
Well, that's it, dude. We'll have to have a cook-off and listen to Bocelli together. Since you're not such a bad neighbor after all.
Yeah, come on over. I got the green egg and the grill, and I'll smoke some ribs for a few hours.
There you go, man. Thanks, dude.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Baron Corbin, my neighbor from just down the street. Congratulations again to him winning the Money in the Bank, the match that I created, as we talked about. And speaking of money, you may want to save up a few bucks of your own for the latest service available from Team Tiger Awesome.
Backed into a paradigm? Are you so inside the box that a synergistic workflow needs to be re-outsourced to push profits? Looking for a fresh approach to a new medium postpartum download situation? Will it crush it? We can help. We're a neo-lexicon with a forward-focused business outreach. We've single-handedly split-shift upper management with a down-tempo trip-hop multiscape approach to deck-based advertising. Don't get caught in the dark ages while your competitors are doing multi-platform cross-based low-level audience analysis. You wouldn't initialize a second echelon stream without downscaling profit expectations, would you? To find out more about how Crush It can help you and your business, listen to the Team Tiger Awesome Show every Sunday on the Jericho Network at Podcast One. And when you think of an nth level digital multiplat with eco-restitution and analog diatribe, think Crush It.
Team Tiger Awesome, as you covered, in laughs, smothered in laughs, and products you'll never need or use or even exist in this lifetime, every Sunday on the Jericho Network on Podcast One. Go subscribe at Apple Podcasts. Be sure to leave a 5-star rating and review. Go check out all the great shows in the Jericho Network. Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon. He's talking to Great White this week. Gene Simmons last week. Lots of great interviews from him. Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus. New episodes every Tuesday. Raven Effect, one of my favorite shows. You need to check it out. New episodes every Monday. The Raven Effect, flagship show, Keep It at 100 with Conan. We love that show, of course. It's the cornerstone to the network. And 5 days a week, Scaring the Crap Out of You, Beyond the Darkness, All Things Paranormal, Monday through Friday. And if you haven't subscribed to the latest podcast from Beyond the Darkness, get to patreon.com and sign up for True Crime Tuesdays. This podcast is completely ad-free, no commercials at all, and it's just $5 a month. You get new episodes every Tuesday. That's patreon.com. And remember, there's still a few
few tickets left for my upcoming Words of Jericho show in my hometown of Winnipeg with special guests Lance Storm and Cyrus. That's August 25th at the Club Regent Event Center. Tickets available at Ticketmaster. And hey, let me give one last shout out to all the great Talk is Jericho sponsors. You can find them at podcast1.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Thanks again to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get 20% off the DDP Yoga app and all DDPY related merch. Saks. Go to saksunderwear.com/Jericho. 20% off your first order. And don't forget the extra most bestest pizza at Little Caesars. That sounds a scrumptioso. Also talking about Alone on History. Also talking about the fine, fine folks at True Car. So many great sponsors. Go check all of them out to keep us doing this for free for you for twice a week. Thank you for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And Friday, in honor of Canada Day, it is the Canadian Rock Show crew. Todd Kearns, Brent Fitz from Slash and the Conspirators, and of course Solo Cup Jeff, and our special guest Brian Slagle will be here to talk about the Canadian Television Inquisition. It's all Canadian TV shows, and man, there are some wacky ones. If you like the Canadian Rock Show, talking about all the Canadian rock bands, wait to hear the Canadian Television Inquisition coming up Friday. You're going to love it. Lots of fun. Great chemistry between the brothers. So go check that out. Thank you again. Be safe. In the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy.
Listen to new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday on the Podcast One app or subscribe at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.
Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
All right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors and shapes.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here, why don't I hold your paintbrush while you call them?
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha portable keyboard, only $79. Add a month of lessons for only $99. Plus the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing and gift cards, the perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center. Lessons available at select locations only.